Welcome to the Effective Engineering Manager podcast.
Hello, Adam. It's your time today. What would you like to talk about?
Hi, Slava. Today, I'd like to close out our mini Agile series with some guidance on how to effectively manage Agile across one or more remote teams. What has some of your experience been with dealing with remote teams, especially remote teams that want to do Agile?
Yes, I think it's a great topic, and I've been doing it for, I would say, 18, 19 years. And initially, I made a lot of mistakes. And I do hope that after this podcast, our listeners will learn really good stuff and how to do it so that things work.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I came to realize over time was that there are so many dynamics that go into any team, but when you have an agile team that's composed of smaller remote teams, the dynamics and variables at play just become compounded. And we'll get into that a little bit. And, you know, the challenge that I started to have was, okay, when you have at least one remote team and you have an onshore team as well at the same time, how do you balance? You know, what do you balance? Do you give more stuff to your onshore team? Do you delegate certain things to the offshore team? How do you do stand-ups? How do you ensure that everybody is contributing to the sprint and delivering on time? And, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg. There's so many more parts to it that we'll get into. But it's a topic that I think is so pertinent, especially now, as all of us are stuck in a COVID world where we're all remote, even if we're just down the street from each other, or whether we're across the globe, across time zones, and dealing with teams that are also in the same situation remotely as well. You know, motivation becomes a major factor when dealing with remote teams that are now stuck at home, have different challenges going on. How do you ensure productivity? How do you communicate? So we'll get into a lot of that.
This sounds great. And yes, it's certainly one of the most relevant topics these days. So can you tell us a bit more about how to manage remote Agile teams?
Sure. So first thing I would like to do is define what a remote team is. What do we mean by a remote team? And in our context here, it's a team that is primarily located in a particular area or country or region, and you may have multiple of these, and that there is a common headquarters somewhere where, you know, maybe the person that's responsible for the team, the tech lead or the director or whatever, has to coordinate work amongst all these individual remote teams. So for an example, let's say you have a team in India, you have a team in the UK, you have a team in California. And whoever is responsible for all of those teams, you know, really has a challenge of saying, okay, how do we coordinate work amongst all those teams? And I would also add here that all of those remote teams are contributing to the same product, the same feature set, and ultimately are going to be part of the same Scrum team. I'm not necessarily talking about remote teams that are of different verticals or complementary parts of the organization. That's kind of a different topic, but this is purely in the engineering sphere where you have to build an agile team that has groups of folks that are grouped in different areas. Now, in a non-COVID work world, we're also talking about where those remote teams would be in the office in their respective locations, right? So you might have five people in India, five people in the UK, five people in the US, for example, right? And maybe in California. So, you know, everybody the groups are co-located and they have to work together. And so that's the kind of the context of what we're going to talk about here. And I've heard, speaking with a bunch of colleagues and peers, some people have as many as five or six remote teams that they have to pull together. Many that are completely spread across the globe, maybe five or six different distinct time zones. And then, you know, ultimately somebody is getting ready for work and somebody's getting ready for bed every day when they have to communicate, and that becomes a challenge. So that's a little bit about what we mean by remote teams. Now let's talk a little bit about what the challenges are in those types of environments. First and foremost, you often have different languages and cultures. You know, a team, even though you may all have a common language of business, which could be English, for example, there is, of course, some fidelity laws in communication when your native language is not English, and especially when you're not in person, you know, communicating and you can't get a lot off body language or whatnot. So language and culture norms are different. People's working days may be different. I mean, certainly, you know, Europe, if you're working with a team in Italy or Spain or Latin America, you know, you may find that the middle of the day becomes less productive for them. So oftentimes they take a longer lunchtime, whereas, you know, teams in other parts of the globe may not do that. So there's different cultural norms, different business norms, different. We talked about different time zones. So, you know, even though most people may work 9 to 5, the intersection of when the teams can really work together, so that not, you know, one team is not just getting up in the middle of the night, is often challenging. And, you know, a lot of times you're dealing with working, you know, some late hours, some very early morning hours, or even both. And then that creates some derived challenges that we'll talk about. And then I think the last major challenge is motivation and ownership. When you have remote teams, there's a tendency to have diluted ownership for the work or the product or the platform. And that can become a challenge because not only does the things drop or no one is owning something end to end, but it decreases the motivation of the individuals. And when you decrease motivation, now you have retention problems. And retention problems in remote organizations become even more challenging because now you have to rely on somebody remotely to do the hiring or recruitment. Right? It's not like you can just go off and do that with an onshore team. So, you know, we see that each one of these challenges leads to some other drive challenges that can become pretty difficult. And then one more thing, and this is certainly not to be underestimated, it's the effect of remote teams. And I think a lot of us can relate to this right now, having to be completely remote in our current world, that burnout and fatigue come a lot easier when you have to communicate and work with remote teams. Because as you're communicating through your virtual channel, it could be through like a Slack channel, or whether it's Zoom or other video conferencing, you know, it takes more to communicate in those environments. It takes more to pay attention. It takes more to collaborate. You know, you have to really do more. You have to pay more attention. You know, you don't get the visual cues that you normally get, or as many of those. You're kind of confined. So burnout becomes very difficult. Burnout is difficult. Oftentimes you have teams that are, you know, working very late hours just to communicate with another part of the team, and they're doing it remotely on Zoom or Skype. And then, you know, they have to turn around the next morning, start doing stuff locally. And burnout can happen very easily. And, you know, we take motivation, extend it one step further. You also want to make sure that each team is getting what I call good work. You know, oftentimes if you have like a headquarters and branch type organization, or if you have a headquarters and you have contracted employees in different parts that make up your remote teams, there sometimes is a tendency to keep the good work or the more challenging work or more meaningful work closer to the local team. And sometimes that's not necessarily done, you know, intentionally. It's just maybe those challenges are easier to be done in person, right? Maybe your leads or your more senior folks are in one location versus others, and then your remote teams often lose out on good work. The other challenges, and this is directly related to management, is that a lot of times, you know, if you're not already a good manager or an effective manager locally, you're not necessarily going to be an effective manager for a remote team, right? It doesn't just switch. I mean, those same practices apply, and probably even more difficult. So oftentimes, you know, managers who aren't very effective at managing their team may see a challenge. And instead of looking at things holistically with strategy or some of the things we talked about before with proper time management, you know, they may say, oh, we got these bugs to fix. Okay, I'm just going to give this, you know, all these bugs to this remote team because, you know, we have cheap labor over there and we're just going to churn them out, right? And we start to pivot, and instead of treating them as individuals, we're now treating them as automatons, right? And again, it's not necessarily intentional, but that happens, and I've seen it happen, and I'm sure I'm definitely guilty of that at one point in my career as well. So that's a little bit of a definition of what we mean by remote teams and some of the challenges, and you know, and what composes some of the things that we're going to do to build best practices off of. What do you think about that, Slava? Do you have any thoughts on kind of dynamics of remote teams?
Yes, I agree. And all those challenges that I'm mentioning, and I definitely saw them. And it's a continuous experience these days. And so how do we approach all those challenges, and how do we make remote teams work?
Yeah, absolutely. And so if we're going to go dive in now, let's talk a little bit about some of the practices now for dealing with that. So the first thing we need to do is identify the teams, right? We need to identify who our remote teams are. We need to kind of define an organizational hierarchy, even if it's just two people in each location, and even if you only have two locations. Create a hierarchy of responsibility and actually put it on paper, because that immediately keeps everybody on the same page, and it actually provides a level of focus that don't just take for granted that everybody understands. Again, especially when you're dealing with folks of different cultures, languages, backgrounds, etc. Once you create that hierarchy and understand each individual and each sub-remote team's responsibility, then you want to define who is going to be the local lead in each team. And I cannot emphasize that enough. One of the key tenets to having successful agile with remote teams is that each remote team is going to be their own subatomic agile unit. Now, that doesn't mean they are completely independent. They're still going to be bound by some of the global rules of the team. But as far as interactions, daily stand-ups, unblocking team issues, and making sure everybody is fully functional, in that regard, you absolutely need that. And to do that, you need a local lead. And don't sacrifice on that at all. You know, if you are the lead of the entire team and you're in, you know, headquartered, you're based in New York, and you have a team in India, and let's say you have a team in the UK, your lead in India and your lead in UK are going to be your eyes and ears for not only during the actual times of the day when you're not working, but also for overseeing that everybody on the team is motivated, following the same practices, and the same spirit and philosophy of the team, which you as an individual can do more in an on-site team, but you have to be able to delegate that to those individuals that are local in a remote team. And so it's important that you spend the time and find the right people for those positions. And the folks that can also share a same common philosophy. So I would actually say that recruitment and hiring for those roles is something that is not only super important, but should be done very diligently and take the time. And even if you have to fly that person in somewhere at some point and spend a few days with them, spend a week or 2 weeks with that person, that investment is going to pay off immediately. And I've done that before, and I've actually built a brand new team. We hired a lead from India. I brought him all the way over to the United States. He spent a good part of a month with me. And then the next 2 years, we had excellent productivity, and we were aligned because of those 2 or 3 weeks that we spent together. He knew exactly what the philosophy was. He knew what the expectations were, and I understood him. So having a good local lead, someone that you can rely on, you know, we're not talking about someone who necessarily has to be the most talented person in the world. It has to be someone that you can mesh with. Remember, this is your eyes and ears, and it's someone that can really, that is has the professional maturity and has the awareness to be able to bridge any gaps that come up and make sure that that team is just not going off on a tangent and that they're staying true to the philosophy and goals of the team. And someone who is also motivated to grow teams as well. I mean, that's got to be there. If that's not there, you're not going to be successful. So creating that hierarchy of teams, building a local lead. The next thing is encouraging cross-team communication and coordination. So as you have a web of teams, you don't want to isolate one team from another, right? The team in India, the team in the UK should be able and should frequently talk to each other, should communicate regularly, should find ways to just even daily chat. One of the things that really kind of warmed my heart in one of my teams was when I had a team in Europe and I had a team in India, and they had to work together. And when I went to visit the team in Europe, and when I went to visit them and watch them work one day, they were all, maybe it was like five or six folks on the team, they were all on Zoom or Slack with the corresponding counterpart in India for this, for the particular work they were doing. And it was really good to see that, because they were building those relationships dynamically. And so ensuring there's cross-team coordination keeps the spirit of a larger team together and being able to learn from each other. Next is making sure each remote team has a slice of vertical ownership. So this comes back to how do you distribute the good work? And it's done by ensuring that each remote team has ownership over something. It could be over a particular service. It could be over a particular feature. It could be over a particular part of the code, could be over a particular functionality. It doesn't matter, but it should be something that they feel they can sink their teeth into and grow themselves. And you, as the manager of the whole team, should embrace their willingness and pride in what they're doing, because that is ultimately going to be an immediate step that you're going to be able to provide to keep them motivated, keep them self-sufficient, and keep them moving forward, right? You don't have to, you know, keep delegating work to them over the ocean. You can allow them to kind of grow organically, and that is extremely important. Next is this concept of a super team culture, and this is kind of a term that I think we're going to just term here in effective engineering manager, but what I mean by that, if you're in charge of the global team, the most important thing is what is your culture and philosophy, and how do you ensure that there's consistency amongst the whole team? And it should be something that is harmonious across the different practices, cultures of all the teams that the remote teams. And so when you have, we haven't gotten to this yet, but we talk about a global stand-up. If you have a global stand-up, you can ensure that some of these practices are being followed. So you know, it can be just five or six things on the team that you really want to ensure. For example, you might say, you know, look, our stand-ups are going to start at, you know, 9:15 every day, wherever you are. Okay. The remote teams. All right. So, you know, encourages that kind of beginning of the day stand-up. Second thing could be, you know, maybe we have a certain goal that, you know, every sprint we deliver a particular, you know, we deliver a release, right? Which you probably should be doing anyways. But a handful of practices that create a culture that people can grab onto. Going along with that, common definitions of done and quality standards. So you want to make sure, as someone who's responsible for the global team, that you are thinking about what it means to be done. What are your standards? What is it that meets exceeds expectations for the team? And that's where your focus is. Your focus is not necessarily on every minute task, but on the broader strategy that ensures that whatever work is being done is being checked against a common definition of done, a common set of quality standards. And then next is this concept of global stand-ups. So you have a local lead, you have local stand-ups every day, right? So the team in UK is doing their own stand-ups, the team in India is doing their own stand-ups. When it comes to sprint planning, you could also keep it remote, although I would suggest that there should be some level of coordination and planning across the team. So you may want to just have the leads in each location, you know, coordinate and then disseminate, have their own planning sessions. But that you can kind of be flexible with. And then the global stand-up will be something that you determine on a team basis. It can be once a week. It could be twice a week. It could be once a sprint. But the key here is not to make it something that you have to do every day. Okay? Why? Again, with remote teams, you're dealing with folks across multiple time zones. You don't want them to burn out. You don't want them to feel like both ends of the day are being burnt by meetings and reporting just because you need status, right? Rely on your local leads. Rely on these practices in place and structure and let that work for you. If you feel that you need to be getting information from those folks every day, something's not right, right? You don't have good leads. You don't have a good super team culture. You don't have a unified definition of done. One of those things is breaking down. So global stand-up is good because it keeps the team fresh to be able to see each other at least once a week. It's a good checkpoint for the team during the course of the sprint. Could also be a good checkpoint for demos, all that kind of stuff. Global stand-ups are good, but pick a good time, keep it infrequent, and rely on the local teams to do work. I had a instance where I knew somebody who had 5 or 6 teams, and they were all over the globe. And he said, "Yeah, I don't really sleep." And I'm like, "Well, that's ridiculous. That's you're not being an effective manager, and your teams are probably suffering because of that." So, you know, use these tools to help you so you don't have to be in a situation like that. The last thing is automating reporting, test cycles, and tooling. You know, with technology where it is today and teams being able to work remotely and high throughput across the globe, leverage automation and tooling and all your automation and test cycles and whatnot, because that's what the team can hold on to every day to ensure that what they're doing is coordinated and integrated amongst the teams, right? People are committing code in the UK and you have another team committing code in India. Your tooling should automatically handle building and deploying and disseminating it across all your different test environments, right? Don't allow the fact that you're distributed to inhibit you from being productive in that regard, right? Tooling is certainly advanced enough to support that and then some. And then the last thing is, as a leader of this entire team, you want to not only have local leads, but you want to have a coaching plan for all of them. This is your checkpoint, your feedback point to make sure that, A, you should be doing one-on-ones already, but having a coaching plan in place. And each plan can be different, right? Your team in the UK may need different set of coaching than the team in India, right? Maybe your team in India, you know, is not versed in a particular framework, or maybe not as used to you know, a certain cadence of software releases. Okay, coach them on that. Or maybe they don't have some of the managerial training to, you know, deal with agile on a day-by-day basis, you know, how to do effective stand-ups and all these other things, right? So each coaching plan is different depending on the team and the location and the needs. And it's up to you as the manager for the global team to put that coaching plan in place and be effective with that. So I think we covered here a handful of practices. It's certainly not exhaustive, but I think it's a great place to start and a great place to recognize that global teams that are composed of a bunch of remote teams really is the norm these days. And it doesn't mean we have to work harder. It doesn't mean we have to work more. It doesn't mean that things are impossible. It just means that we have to adopt the right strategy to make it effective.
Yes, this is really good stuff. And I totally agree on building leads. My experience is the same. Without local leads, either the team will end up overworking or you will end up undersleeping. And do it for a few months, it's a recipe for a disaster. Right, and I also agree on building shared culture and building shared processes and tools, right? essentially this should be just like a local team, except with the leads driving their own chunks of work remotely. And I think the only of all those things that you mentioned, I can only add one, I think, which is important, is having a regular weekly one-on-ones with leads, right? Because remote teams do not follow throw the fence approach, right? You have to be in touch with leads and sometimes even do skip levels, but doing weekly one-on-ones with the remote leads is super critical. So I have a question. So how can we create this type of culture when the teams are already distributed and you want to institute some of these practices? Where do we start?
That's a great question, Slava. And, you know, really, in a nutshell, you start the same place as if you're building the team from scratch. And I think that's the beauty of some of the practices we mentioned here, is that they're very versatile. So, you know, first by identifying your team, like literally on paper, list everybody out, list the hierarchy, list the where each team is and remotely. And you'd be amazed how quickly people would be like, oh, okay, now I get it. Identifying leads, coaching plans, like you said, one-on-ones, and instituting a common definition of done. I mean, those are some very straightforward things you can do to start. Certainly upfront, you may need to spend more time. Maybe your first sprint, you need to do daily global stand-ups just to kind of keep the flow going. Or maybe you need to fly your remote leads into one location for a couple weeks. Multiple ways to do it. But that's ultimately where you could possibly start.
That's great, Adam. And so we reviewed why remote agile teams are both practical, important, and some great ways to effectively manage them. And then we reviewed some of the key challenges. So to recap for our listeners, can you provide a brief checklist of items that our listeners can use to start practicing this tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a quick checklist. First, identify the team organization composition and create a tree of the respective teams and individuals. Number two, delegate and train a lead in each remote team and build a coaching plan for both that lead and the respective team. Number three, identify the daily stand-up locally and globally. So like we said, the global stand-up doesn't have to be daily, ideally less frequent. Number four, define the tools and collaboration techniques for the team, leveraging technology as much as possible, which is already oriented for to be global and distributed. Number five, identify the key definitions of done and ensure they are shared across the entire team. Common culture, this common superculture. And lastly, provide sequential time zone coverage as necessary. Leveraging the fact your teams are remote and ideally distributed globally, use that to your advantage and be able to either sequence them or have overlapping coverage areas for different things that may be needed to support the product so as not to burn out one individual or one particular team.
Thank you, Adam. This is good stuff.
Thank you, Slava. More good stuff is certainly on its way, so stay tuned.